Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for a telephone town hall with Congresswoman Diana DeGette. My name is Juliette Johnson, and I'm the Congresswoman's Communications Director, and I'll be moderating the town hall this afternoon. For those of you unfamiliar with the telephone town hall format, let me give you a brief overview of how things will work. In just a minute, I will introduce Congresswoman DeGette, who will make some brief opening remarks to kick things off, and then we'll start taking questions. If at any time on this call you have a question you'd like to ask the Congresswoman, please press star 3. Again, that's star 3, and then you'll be placed into the queue. We'll be talking for about an hour on issues that are important to you, and we'll try to get to as many of your questions as possible. I'm going to get things started now by turning over to the Congresswoman, but while she's speaking, again, feel free to begin hitting star 3 to get your questions into the queue. Congresswoman?
Thank you so much, Juliette. Hello to everybody. It's Congresswoman Diana DeGette, and I want to thank you for taking time out this afternoon to join me for this telephone town hall meeting. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with so many of my constituents all at once, and I hope to be able to answer some questions on the issues that you care about the most. And given everything that's happening in our country right now, today is a really important time for me to try to hear from you. So we'll probably have a number of people who want to ask questions. I will try to get to as many of the questions as possible. If I don't get to your question in time, please get in touch with my office in the coming days at 303-844-4988. But I do promise that we'll get to as many as we can in the time allotted. Just a reminder that if you want to ask a question, please press star 3. Again, that's star 3 on your phone to be put into the queue for questions. Tomorrow will mark the 45th anniversary of the launch of Medicare. Many of you already know that Medicare transformed what it meant to grow older in this country. In 1964, over 51% of Americans over 65 had health care coverage. But because of Medicare, coverage is universal, and because of that fact, life expectancy of senior Americans continues to rise. Medicare now provides comprehensive health care to 47 million Americans, including almost 500,000 people right here in the Denver area. When we passed health care reform last year in Congress, we made sure to make it even better by closing the prescription drug donut hole, which would help 35,000 people in our community to get medications more easily. Now, unfortunately, most of you have heard, I'm sure, that some leaders in Washington have proposed a plan to end Medicare as we know it. This proposal has already passed the House of Representatives, even though I voted no, and it's now sitting in the Senate. I certainly agree with everybody on a bipartisan basis that we've got to get our fiscal house in order, and we have to make sure that we ensure Medicare solvency. We've got to get our national debt under control. We have to tackle the challenge of the deficit, but I don't think we can do that on the backs of America's seniors. This proposal that was passed in the House would have cost almost $6,000 for each senior citizen in the future who was on Medicare, and I don't think that people could really afford that. Here's how it would have worked. Important Medicare benefits that were passed in the health care bill last year, like closing the prescription drug loophole, would be eliminated immediately. And for people who are 54 and under, Medicare in its entirety would be replaced by a voucher program. So for people here in Denver, that would mean the 35,000 people who can now get their medication because we closed that Part D donut hole would pay $348 million more for drugs over the next 10 years. And for the almost 500,000 current beneficiaries of Medicare in our community, it would have eliminated new preventative health care benefits that you can get under the health care bill. But then what would happen for people who are under 54, the future Medicare beneficiaries, over 700,000 people in this area who are between the ages of 44 and 54 would have to save an additional $182,000 to $287,000 to pay for the increase of health care retirement in their later years. And so this just is, especially in this economy, a lot of people, including me, are very, very concerned about this. The other issue a lot of people have been talking about is Medicaid, because for many seniors, Medicare is not the only major program that faces challenges and the need for a long-term solvency plan. Medicaid, which is a really important program for low-income families and also seniors in nursing homes, is under attack in Washington. This same bill that passed the House would have proposed to completely end Medicaid's guarantee of coverage for folks and turn the whole program into a block grant. And so this would not just devastate poor people, it would also devastate the ability of senior citizens to pay for their nursing home coverage. And so these are really serious issues. I think we need to find ways to keep both of these programs and Social Security solvent in the future. But I think the way to do it is not to cut benefits for current beneficiaries and to do it in ways that won't be so terribly burdensome on those who are just about to retire. So I know there are a lot of you who have many questions about the budget, about these programs, but about any other issues that are facing our community or our country at all. I've just chosen to talk about these issues because with the anniversary tomorrow and with these on my mind, I think it's important. But I think that any questions you have, I think now's the time for you to be heard. And so I want to thank you for taking the time to be on this telephone town hall meeting. And let's talk about anything you want to talk about. If you're interested, please press *3 now. Juliet?
Thank you so much, Congresswoman. It looks like our first call is coming from Elta in Denver. Elta, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Hi, Elta.
Hi. I'm Ethel.
Ethel. Hi, Ethel. Sorry about that. Sorry.
Were we going to get a raise in our Social Security? We haven't had one in 2 years, and it's really hurting. The food is high, gas is high, everything is high, and we're staying at the same thing for 2 years and can't work. I'm 80 years old, and I'm just not able to do anything, but it's really putting me under stress.
Ethel, there's a commission that decides every year whether they think the cost of living has gone up. And I've talked to, and that's why they haven't increased the benefits the last 2 years, because they said that the cost of living didn't go up. Now, I've talked to a lot of seniors in my district who said exactly what you just said, which is gas is going up. We saw record high gasoline prices this spring, and food is going up. And I would hope that the commission would recommend a cost of living increase for seniors this year, especially since you haven't had one for the last 2 years. So what you can do, the recommendation should be out soon. You can call my Denver office if you want to have this information. I don't believe the recommendation has been made yet for this year. And the phone number over here is 303-844-4988. And I would suggest you call them and see if they can find out when that recommendation will come out.
All right. And our next call looks like it comes from Carolyn. Carolyn, you're live with the Congresswoman.
Hi, Congresswoman.
Hi, Carolyn.
I would like to know if it should pass the Senate as well. What is that going to do for people like me that have one of my lungs has collapsed and I have a systemic disease that's potentially fatal? What am I going to do with my Medicare and Social Security disability being cut?
Let me ask you, Carolyn, are you a current beneficiary?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so for people like you, some of the benefits that you got under the Affordable Health Care Act of closing the donut hole for your prescription drug coverage, and also for some additional preventative care and so on, that would be cut. But the proposal does not cut benefits for current beneficiaries other than that. Although, you know, frankly, if you had to pay out of pocket for a lot of your medications, that would probably be a serious problem right there. I will say that While this proposal passed the House and I voted against it, and I think all of the Democrats voted against it in the House, it's pending in the Senate. I don't believe that Senator Reid intends to bring this up, but the House has now passed this two times. It was passed as a part of Congressman Ryan's budget, and then it was reaffirmed a second time. And so this is one thing we just think we need to get this out to seniors, that this is a very big problem.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Just a reminder to everyone that if you'd like to ask a question, please hit *3. Again, that's *3. Right now, we'd love to take a question from Ference in Denver. Ference, you're live with the Congresswoman.
Hi, Ference.
Yes, Senator DeGette, hello.
Hi, I'm here.
Yeah. I also have a concern about Social Security because I'm planning on retiring in another year. I just turned 64. And how is this going to – you just said several things that are very bleak in the future for me to use that as any part of my retirement. Am I going to be able to collect my retirement when I turn 65 in less than a year?
Well, here's the good – I mean, I don't mean to sound bleak, but I think people – one of the reasons I'm talking about the proposals of the majority in the House in particular to cut social – or to cut Medicare benefits and Medicaid benefits for future seniors, I think seniors really need to speak up and let all the elected officials know about what the terrible problems that they would have for this. But with Social Security, actually Social Security, if nothing happened, Social Security would be solvent for many, many years. And so for the 56 million Americans that get Social Security benefits, they are going to be able to continue to get those benefits. And with you retiring in 1 year, you will be able to get your benefits just like you're planning right now. So Social Security is still very strong. And so far, we haven't seen proposals to cut that. I would obviously oppose any of those efforts, too. By the way, our first caller, Ethel, was asking about the cost of living projections for the COLA for Social Security. And that final figure will be announced in mid-October. I had said that it hadn't been announced yet. It'll be announced in mid-October. And what the current projections are showing is about a 1% increase in the COLA, which isn't a lot, but at least it's something for this year.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Again, if you have a question you'd like to ask, please hit *3. Now we have a question from Beverly. Beverly, you're live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hi, Beverly.
Hi, Congresswoman. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a couple of questions, and one pertains to the answer that you just gave about Social Security. I'm not understanding why it is tied to an index that is not really representative of our costs going up all the time. I'm 73, and my costs certainly have gone up each year, and it has been, what, 3 or 4 years since we've had an increase, and now possibly there's a projection of 1%, but my costs have gone up more than 1%. Is there any way of changing the way Social Security is tied to another index that is more representative of what's really going on in the real world? The other part of my question is I am very grateful for the prescription drug program. But I'm already in the donut hole. My prescriptions are between $800 and $1,200 a month. So I do ultimately get into the catastrophic area. But
yeah,
this is really difficult for seniors. And I've worked since I'm 16 years old. So I feel that I have worked for all of these things. What do you see in the future for this? How can we... better Yeah, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I know. You know, Beverly, I really want to thank you for both of those questions. And as I had said when I was talking to Ethel, I agree with you about this, about the way they determine the cost of living increases for Social Security, because a lot of us have said the last few years, some of the fixed costs that the seniors face, like food and gasoline, have clearly gone up for everybody, but yet because of the formula that the Social Security Administration uses, the COLA adjustment has not gone up. And so a lot of us in Congress have really been urging the Social Security Administration to change its formula under which they determine what the COLA will be, so that it'll really reflect the cost of goods and services that seniors in particular access. And so far we haven't gotten too far with that, but I think that is a real concern, and a lot of us have been urging them to really reevaluate their formula because it doesn't seem to be tied specifically to the things that the seniors need. With respect to your second question about the prescription drug benefit and the donut hole, I have to say that I was glad when Congress passed the Part D prescription drug benefit. I thought it was high time that they do that. But what I was concerned about is this donut hole. So seniors like you who have high monthly prescription drug costs, almost immediately you're in this donut hole where you're having to pay money out of pocket before you get into the catastrophic drugs. And that's why in the Affordable Health Care Act that we passed a couple of years ago, we narrowed that down dramatically, so now seniors won't have to be in that donut hole and their out-of-pocket costs will be greatly reduced. And that's one of the concerns I have about this legislation that the new Republican majority passed in the House, is it would reverse that, so you would have to pay those donut hole costs. And so that's why I'm glad that Senator Reid's not going to bring it up in the Senate, because you at least have some benefits. Ultimately, I've got to say, I supported at the time, and I support now, giving the Secretary of HHS the ability to negotiate prescription drug benefits. They do it under the to negotiate the prices for seniors, because right now what happens is drug companies can just charge anything they want for these drugs under the Part D benefit, and the taxpayers are paying for a lot of that, and the seniors are paying for the rest. The VA right now uses a system where the secretary of the VA negotiates the prescription drug prices, and it works. And so I think that would really help keep prescription drug costs down for seniors and also, frankly, for the taxpayers.
Thank you. Just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please hit *3. Looks like we have Karen from Denver. Karen, you're live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. I wanted to know I wanted to ask you about this Medicare issue with the one that Congressman Matt Ryan said that he wants us to pass, that it said for 55 and under, like, that they would get the same chance as Congress gets, except the thing that they aren't saying is that the people who would get a chance at that, we're not going to have a job so we can pay that premium.
Right.
And
well, oh, go ahead. Sorry, Karen.
So, and I'm not worried so much about me, because since it didn't pass yet, you know, I'm going to make it under the line, you know, I'm going to make it and get Medicare. But my husband and my sister, they're not. And then they're not going to be able to afford, you know, health insurance.
Right, right.
That's
well,
really scared me.
Karen, let me tell you, I agree with what you're saying, and that's why I voted against the Ryan plan, because what the Ryan plan would basically say is for people who are 54 years old and under, they won't be able to get the same Medicare program that current seniors get, and that and it goes to a private voucher system. And you're exactly right. Congressman Ryan was being a little fuzzy with the facts when he said that those people would just get the same thing that Congress gets, because what Congress gets is the same thing every other federal employee gets, and it's what people get when they're employed. We don't have any special program. We're enrolled in the Federal Employees Health Care Program, which is an insurance program that working people pay into. And you're exactly right, Karen, when you say somebody who's retired doesn't have a job. So if you give them a voucher system and you tell them that they have to pay $6,000 a year more, retired seniors on a fixed income won't be able to do that. And so that's why I oppose that bill, and that's why I think that's why I don't think it's going to go anywhere in the Senate. And President Obama said that if it did pass, that he would veto it, because it's really not a fair comparison to tell seniors that they should basically buy a private insurance plan, because they're not working, and that's why we have Medicare. So I agree with you.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Now we have Maureen from Denver. Maureen, you're live with the Congresswoman.
Thank you.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi. A couple things. I think it's important to point out that there won't be insurance companies who want to offer plans to seniors. There's not enough profit, and they won't be offering them. But my question is what kinds of proposals do the Democrats have to get more primary care doctors?
Well, you know, Maureen, I agree with you about I think that there really is a serious question about whether insurance companies would offer that coverage to seniors for that reason. And with your question of the primary care doctors, we were really worried about that when we passed the Affordable Health Care Act, because we would be insuring 37 million more Americans under the Affordable Health Care Act, and so we're clearly going to need a lot more primary care physicians. So as part of our bill, we put money into scholarships and financial aid for primary care physicians as part of that bill, and we're going to be seeing more and more people coming online. To build up a medical to build up a team of doctors, to build up a medical force, you need to have time, because it you just can't get doctors immediately. So that's part of the reason we phase that in the Affordable Health Care Act, and it's a big priority of mine.
Terrific. Just a reminder to everyone that if you'd like to ask a question, please hit *3 and you'll be placed in the queue. Now it looks like we have a question from Mitch. Mitch, you're live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hi, Mitch.
Oh, thank you. The president was talking earlier in this game about means testing for Social Security and I think Medicare as well. Have you heard anything more about that, or has that been pursued as part of a compromise?
I don't believe that that the president is talking about means testing Social Security or Medicare as part of a reform package. One thing I always point out to people is that Social Security is solvent until the year 2036. Medicare, we're going to need to do something about that much sooner than that. Probably 2018 we'll start to look at problems with solvency of that program. But I don't think means, you know, Social Security and Medicare were intended as programs that would be universal programs that would benefit all seniors. And frankly, the seniors today believe, and they all worked their entire career and paid their own money into the Social Security Trust Fund and into the Medicare Trust Fund. And so it would be unfair to means test those programs for them. If we sat down in a bipartisan way and talked about just some very small fixes to these programs, then I think that we could keep those programs solvent for another generation, because the programs are so large. And so what I've been saying is, you know, we should just forget about partisan politics. We should sit down on a bipartisan basis and talk about how we could make slight adjustments to both of those programs to make sure that they are available to everybody. But to do something so drastic as to essentially privatize Medicare for people who are very close to retirement, I think it would be a terrible mistake, and it's not supported by anybody in this country, whether they're seniors or not.
Thank you. Just another reminder, please hit star 3 if you would like to ask the Congresswoman a question. Right now we have Shirley Jean. Shirley Jean, are you with us?
I am.
Hi, Shirley Jean.
Hi, Congresswoman. My question is, can they remove the cap on Medicare and Social Security? I think it's like $106,000 at the present time. And I think the middle class can have it taken out of their paychecks throughout their entire working year, where the wealthy, as soon as they reach $106,000, which may be in a month or two, it's not removed from their paychecks or put on their paychecks. And is there a way that that cap can be removed?
Well, you know, that's one of the suggestions that some people have made for how we could get more revenue into the system. And what the way that would work, I think you're right. I think the cap is something like $106,000. And then beyond that, then the Social Security is not taken out of people's paychecks. But as I said, if we got going on this right now, you wouldn't even have to remove the cap altogether. You might just raise the cap, and you'd get more revenue into the program. And so I definitely think that's one thing that we should talk about, because wealthier people are more able to pay into that system. The other thing someone suggested to me just last night, I was at a meeting, and somebody said, here's the way to get more money into the Medicare and Social Security trust funds, put more people to work. Because if people are working, then they're paying their taxes, and then they're paying into the system. And I thought, you know, that's something that is so true. And so one thing I think we should be focusing on in Washington right now is, how do we put people back to work? I've got a lot of ideas. In fact, if you'd like, you can go on my website or call my office. I'm putting together a whole list of jobs creation programs that I think Congress should really be looking at. And frankly, I think if we could sit down on a bipartisan basis and talk about job creation, we'd be a lot better off than if we were just making these proposals about doing things like privatizing Medicare that are never going to become law. I think that's what the American people would really like us to do, and that's what I'd really like to go back there and work on. So my website is www.deget.house.gov. And you can go on there. We should be putting that up shortly.
Terrific. Thank you, Congresswoman. Now we have Willie. Willie, you're on the line with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hi, Willie.
Hi. One question I was just wondering, if the president, in the discussion with the Republicans, if they can state definite that they take in the tax off the discussion, can he say he's taken Medicare and Social Security out of it?
President Obama has already said he will. He said a couple of things. Number one, he said he's not going to agree with a plan that privatizes Medicare, and he's not going to agree with a plan that will hurt Social Security, or that will change benefits of Social Security for current seniors. The other thing the president has said, which I agree with, is that he's not going to agree. He thinks, as I do, that we need to balance the budget and we need to reduce the deficit. But he doesn't think it should be done on the backs of the middle class and the poor people. He thinks everybody should share equally. And that's why, for example, some of us think we should not continue the tax breaks for people who make over $250,000 a year, or for large corporations like GE that paid no corporate income taxes last year. We think it's a matter of equity, and we think if the middle class and seniors and others are being asked to make sacrifices, then everybody should have to make those sacrifices, including wealthy people, big oil and gas companies, and big corporations in this country.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Now we have Leanne. Leanne, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Hi, Leanne.
Thank you so much. I'm kind of usually a little disenfranchised. I normally take the Republican position on most things, but I thank you for taking my call. My biggest concern is on the, well, I shouldn't say the biggest. There are a lot of them, as many of us probably have. But the Advantage plan, doing away with that, on the Obama health care plan is so big to most seniors, and I don't know that if they quite get what happens when the Advantage plan goes away. I have a quick example for myself. The 20% that I would have to pay that Medicare doesn't pay, and Congresswoman, if you have something that's going to fill this gap when I get through, I'm happy to hear it. Anyway, that 20%, I had two hip replacements, and I had cataract surgery on both eyes. This was all within about a three-year period of time. Now, all of those things kept me as a full-time volunteer in my community, in my city, for many organizations. If I did not have the Advantage plan, those three items would have cost me $30,000, which I could not have done. I would be in a wheelchair is where I would be, and my eyesight continued to diminish. So what would I do with the Obama health care to make up that 20%? I make just enough money. I cannot fall into the Medicare bracket. So I can't get Medicare and Medicaid. The Medicaid bracket. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Leanne, I've got to say I don't think most of these issues are partisan issues, so I'm really glad to take your question. And I will also say I have something in common with you, which is we've both had two hip replacements. So I hope yours are working as well as mine are. I can't really speak exactly to the plan that you had about the copayment, but if you want to call my Denver office, we have a caseworker here who can help you figure out, without the Medicare Advantage plan that you had, what other plan you could go into. Because here's what we did under the Affordable Care Act. We were paying a number of private insurance companies for providing insurance plans for seniors, and we were giving them extra payments. In most places, they were not providing any additional medical care to those seniors. They were just kind of getting extra money. And Medicare Advantage was originally designed to have insurance companies give seniors better health insurance at a lower price within the Medicare program, and that's why we paid them an incentive. But as it turned out, they really weren't giving most seniors additional benefits, and it was costing the government billions of dollars every year. So we eliminated that extra payment to the Medicare Advantage companies. At the same time, though, we improved Medicare's services to seniors in a lot of directions that I had talked about earlier, so that seniors would be able to get more access under the Medicare plan to a lot of the services that you would need and that other seniors would need. And so that's what is designed to substitute. What we really felt like is we were spending billions of dollars on this program, and seniors weren't really getting any benefit. So I would suggest that you call my office and talk to a caseworker here and see if she can actually help you work through the details of your plan to see what would improve.
Thank you, Congresswoman. It looks like our next call is from Brian in Denver. Brian, you're live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hi, Brian.
Hello, Congresswoman. Thank you so much for taking my question. Two parts. First of all, I have Parkinson's disease, which means naturally that I'm concerned about health care and about funding for medical research, but I spent my working career working for the state of Colorado in infrastructure and, more importantly, protection of the environment, and I feel like I'm watching, and I would include in infrastructure schools even though I didn't work on them, and I feel like I'm watching that both fritter away and be deliberately allowed to fall apart, and watching folks want to get rid of agencies like the EPA, which I feel are doing work that's critical to the future of my adult kids and lots of people. And so I'm wondering how, if we're having enough trouble dealing with Medicare, Social Security, and so on, are we ever going to get caught up with infrastructure and with protection of the environment to the level of other countries in the world?
Well, you know, thank you for that question, and I've got to say that in terms of biomedical research, you said you had Parkinson's, and you'll be pleased to know that just the other day I reintroduced my stem cell legislation that I've been working on a bipartisan basis for many years in Congress. And what this bill would do is it would codify what President Obama's executive order did, which is to allow ethical embryonic stem cell research and to fund it through the NIH. And we are very close to many human trials on stem cell research, including trials in Parkinson's and diabetes, paralysis and nerve regeneration and diseases of the eyes. So that's all very exciting research. And the reason I think we need to codify that is so that we can make sure that researchers have the stability of knowing that we're going to allow ethical stem cell research and we're going to have some guidelines around how we're going to do it. But on a bigger scale, to your bigger question about infrastructure and the environment and these other things, we've been really having a big debate in Washington because we are in an economic downturn. We need to find a way to preserve our environment, to preserve our infrastructure in this country, to create jobs, but at the same time to balance the budget and to reduce the deficit. And there's really two very stark ways of doing it. One way is what we have seen from the new House leadership this year, where they've passed legislation which would do things like gut the EPA and their enforcement of the Clean Air Act and the Safe Drinking Water Act, the food safety laws, which make sure that our food supply is safe in this country, and many other laws like that, which really protect consumers and protect my constituents. Some of these attempts have not been anything that would really save any money. It's just an ideological effort to gut agencies that really, I think, protect the public health. And my view is we do need to balance our budget. We do need to reduce our deficit, but we need to also do it in a way that cements our role as a leader in the world. So instead of just cutting everything with a meat axe approach, which is what we're seeing from the majority, at least in the U.S. House, what I tell people is you need to look at everything, you need to put everything on the table, but then you need to say, what is it that makes us first in the world? And I would argue biomedical research, we should support that more, stem cell research and other types of research, development of alternative energy sources so that we can move to clean domestic energy and away from dependence on foreign oil. Things like that are going to keep us number one in the world, and they're going to create jobs. And then at the same time, though, I think we need to look at things like, as I had said, is it really fair to give tax cuts to the very rich or to corporations during this time? What can we do to do we really need all these defense systems that we've got? We really need to wind down these wars and bring our troops home. For one thing, we should be building schools and infrastructure in the U.S. and not around the world in a time of an economic downturn. So I think that there are balances to be made. I think we can balance the budget, but we shouldn't just do it by having a MEDAX approach to cutting many programs that protect our health and our welfare and our ability to create jobs in this new economy.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Now it looks like our next call comes from Ray. Ray, you're live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hi, Ray.
Hi. Thank you for allowing me on. My question seems a little far-fetched, but this debate that's going on with the debt ceiling, my major concern, just like it was with the prescription drug things that the drug companies pushed through a few years back, I'm afraid that there's something in the back room that's going to get cut from Social Security once they try to get this debt ceiling passed in August. Do you foresee anything happening or changing in Social Security itself where it won't be hit with major changes? Because
I honestly don't think that the seniors of America would stand for some backroom deal to cut Social Security. And one thing that I intend to do is to look very closely at any kind of an agreement that's reached. With the debt ceiling, I don't like to raise the debt ceiling. I think that it's a wake-up call that we need to get our financial house in order. But on the other hand, we have to do it. It's sort of like if you didn't pay your credit card bills or your home mortgage, then your reputation would go down. You'd lose your home. It would be a disaster. It's the same thing for the U.S. We have these obligations, and we have to make sure that we pay these obligations. So what I said from the day one, I don't like having to vote to raise the debt ceiling, but it's the responsible and mature thing to do. I don't think it should be tied to these other cuts, and I don't think that people should hold the honoring of our financial obligations hostage to other cuts that they want to see, especially if they wanted a cut in Social Security. But I do not believe that there will be any cuts to Social Security. And if there were cuts like that proposed, I certainly wouldn't vote for it, and I don't think it could pass.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Don. Don, are you there?
Yeah, my original question was going to be about means testing, which is already covered, but I don't think I should be punished because I was doing a responsible job of saving for retirement. My real question now is, isn't most of the Social Security trust fund just invested in Treasury bills, which means the government's just going to have to go out and borrow more money to replace those bills and pay for Social Security?
Well, thank you for your question, Don. And, you know, we've had a lot of discussion over the years about where the Social Security Trust Fund was invested, and I think most of it is in Treasury bills. I've always said, you know, you could look and see where this money is invested, but as we've seen with the recent drop in the stock market, I mean, there were some proposals several years ago to invest the Social Security Trust Fund in the stock market. I think most people right now who rely on that income are pretty happy that we didn't do that, because just as we saw with our private retirement accounts, the trust fund would have lost billions and billions of dollars when the stock market went down. Now, having said that, I think there are ways we can look at improving our return on the trust fund, and I think that's one of the conversations that we should have as we look at and see how the fund can remain solvent.
Thank you. All right. Just a reminder to everyone, if you'd like to ask a question, please hit *3 and we will get you into the queue. Our next question comes from Jean. Jean, you're live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hygiene.
Thank you, Congresswoman. My comment, more than anything, piggybacks on a previous caller's comment about the tax schedule and your response. I have felt for a long time that the taxation table and the various rates are disproportionate, that the middle class is really carrying the load, and that the higher income brackets are not paying their fair share. And then you gave the example of GE, which is, I think, an atrocious case of tax dodging or whatever you want to call it, and no matter how legal it might be. And I think that a major tax overhaul, and I know that this will have people kicking and screaming, but if we could have a major tax overhaul and a more equitable taxation process, I think we would help the funding not only for Medicare and Medicaid, which are so essential, but some of the environmental programs and other things for the entire quality of life and things that benefit our health overall.
You know, Jean, I mean, you just said it much better than I could say it. I completely agree with 100% with you. I think that a lot of people say to me, well, not a lot, but sometimes people say to me, well, you know, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. That may be true, but there are so many loopholes. You get these major corporations who don't pay any corporate taxes, and that's the problem. So I do think, frankly, I think we need to get through these debt talks. We need to get through the balancing the budget talks, and then I think we need to make a serious attempt. And again, this is something that can be done on a bipartisan basis to simplify the tax code. It would help equalize the burden, and it wouldn't put the burden so much on the middle class. And I agree completely with you.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Now we have Sylvia. Sylvia, you're live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hi, Sylvia.
Hello, Congressman DeGette. I have MS, and I was wondering how the stem cell research is going.
Well, Sylvia, the good news is that President Obama entered an executive order in March of 2009, which allowed for an expansion of ethical embryonic stem cell research, and then the National Institutes of Health issued some guidelines about how that research would be conducted to make sure that it was done in an ethical way. And to date, they've already spent several hundred million dollars on embryonic stem cell research, as well as other kinds of exciting new stem cell research breakthroughs. And as I had said earlier, there have been several different studies that have already been approved for human subject research. None of them are exactly in the MS area, but of course, all of this research is really, really coming along and taking off right now. And so, I just have great hope. There's over 100 million Americans and their families who would be affected by breakthroughs with stem cell research, and that includes MS and Parkinson's. We had a caller earlier, Brian, who had Parkinson's, and diabetes and stem. I mean, there's just so much that could be benefited from this, and that's why I really support this ethical cell-based research, but I also support really a robust funding program through the NIH.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Just a reminder, we've got about 10 minutes left, so if you'd like to ask a question, please hit *3, and we'll be sure to put you into the queue. Right now, we have a question from Sally. Sally, you're live on the line with the Congresswoman.
Hi, Sally.
Hi, Diane. There's several things that I'm upset about, and a lot of people have covered them. One is the wealthy, and they participate in all the advantages that we get in the United States from our collective involvement. But it does seem like the middle class and those below the poverty line are paying the highest price. We bailed out Wall Street, leaders have borrowed from the Social Security and Medicare funds for decades, and we have and we're being blamed for that, and now we need cuts, and because the government doesn't want to pay it back or can't pay it back, and I'm also resentful of the fact, and I'd like to know why we talk about Medicare and Social Security as entitlement programs. They are not entitlement. We collectively pay into that, and I've been paying since I was 11 years old. And Medicare and Social Security, I'm 68. I'm still working. I have stage 4 colon cancer, and so I'm on chemotherapy, and I'm fighting that. And Medicare and Social Security have saved my life.
Right.
And they have worked beautifully. They've worked wonderfully well. And for me, and I'm assuming for a lot of other people, and I don't understand why they want to mess with a program in the government that is working so well, and why we can't raise money on the rich who benefit from Medicare and and Social Security. I know because I know a lot of them, and they benefit from it, and so from the collective involvement. So why can't it be raised on them?
Well, I mean,
why can they not?
Yeah, it can. I mean, it can be raised, and I agree with I agree with what you're saying. Is people forget? And I said this earlier. Medicare and Social Security are programs that were set up so people could pay in. And then they would receive it back when they were seniors. And, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about this. Before we had Medicare and Social Security, the majority of senior citizens in this country lived under the poverty line. And if they became disabled or sick, they couldn't afford to get the health care treatment they needed. They often had to move in with family members. And so now, seniors really have enjoyed a much higher quality of health, a much higher quality of living. And it is solely because of Social Security and Medicare. And so I agree with you. I think that we made those promises to our seniors, and we need to keep those promises. We also need to make sure that we are able to keep those promises to younger workers who have paid into those systems also. And so if that means that we need to make some minor adjustments for future beneficiaries, then we need to do that, but not for current beneficiaries who have had those promises made to them and who have made their retirement decisions based on those promises that we made. You know, let me just point out one other thing in terms of the TARP, the Wall Street bailout, because I just think it's important that people know this. I was in Congress when we did that, and George W. Bush was the president, and we had a Democratic Congress. And we were called by the Secretary of the Treasury and the Secretary of the Fed, who said that our financial institutions were about to go off a cliff and that they had to be shored up. And so actually it was Nancy Pelosi and the leadership in the House who said, well, you know, we don't want our economy to go off a cliff, but we are not going to give Wall Street a blank check. And so we insisted that there be provisions into that bill that said that the money had to be paid back. And as of this spring, all that money that was paid out to Wall Street to bail them out, all that has been paid back to the taxpayers. And it looks like in the end we actually might make a profit from that. So you know, while I voted for that because I didn't want our economy to go off the cliff, I wanted to make sure it got paid back. And it did. But, you know, for the future, several of our callers, I think one of the themes of today's call has been everybody, if we're all being asked to share in making our economy come back, then the wealthy people have a responsibility to do that too, and the corporations have a responsibility to do that. And you know, I hear a lot of arguments in Congress these days about, well, we just need to give more tax cuts to the wealthy. We need to give more tax cuts to corporations so that will have a trickle-down effect and support the economy. In my opinion, it's never worked before, and so why anybody would think it would work now, I don't know. I think they need to pay their fair share, and I think we need to keep the promises that we've made to our seniors. And that's the way I feel, and that's the way I vote. So I hope I've made that clear in this call today. So maybe we have time for maybe one more question, Juliet.
Yes, one more question, and then I think we can close up from there. It looks like we have Terry on the line. Terry, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you,
hi,
Congressman.
Terry.
Hi, thank you, Congressman, for taking my call today. I am a 58-year-old registered nurse. I am an unaffiliated voter, and I do work in a hospital every day. And I am seeing how much it's costing for Medicare and Medicaid patients. And I am going to, and I am not saying that we should not, that we should do anything different than we are doing. I am absolutely not saying that, but I am very concerned about what's going to happen to my niece and nephew and their children when the bill comes due from us in the future. I do agree totally with what all the callers have said about raising corporate taxes and making sure the wealthy do their share. I appreciate that, but I'm already getting questions and comments from my 21-year-old nephew saying, what are you going to do to help me and my family, as because he's already paying Social Security too. And you talk about maybe for one more generation, we're going to have full benefits and everything's fine, but what happens after that?
Yeah, well, Terry, you know, I agree with you. It is an imperative for future generations, but also for righting our economy, that we have to balance the budget and we have to stop this deficit spending. But I don't think that, and I think you would probably agree with me, I don't think the way we do that is to cut Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid for current seniors, because it's not going to save that much money, it's not going to balance the budget, and it's really going to put a burden on these groups who can least afford to bear that burden. But having said that, I think two things. Number one, there are ways that we can keep those programs solvent for future generations. Your nephew is exactly the same age as my daughter, who just graduated from college a couple of weeks ago. And I want to make sure when she retires in 40, 45 years that she has Social Security and Medicare. And there are ways to do that right now by just making small adjustments for future beneficiaries. And I think we should do that on a bipartisan basis. In terms of the budget as a whole, as I had said earlier in this call, I think it's very important that we balance the budget, and there are ways to do it. And I talked about some of them. We need to look at the corporations and the wealthiest Americans and the tax cuts that we've given to them. We need to look at the spending that we've had on these two wars, and we need to stop that. We need to look at agriculture subsidies and cut agriculture subsidies to large agribusiness. We need to look at all kinds of different other ways that we can balance the budget. But we shouldn't do it just by putting it on the backs of seniors and middle Americans, and that's my view. So, anyway, I hope that kind of clarifies it. I think we're out of time. So I just want to thank everybody for participating in this phone call today, and I think Juliet has some more information for you.
Yes, thank you, Congresswoman. Thank you for taking the time. And to everyone who's on the line, I know a number of you still had questions and we weren't able to get to them, but I hope that you'll get in touch with the Congresswoman's office at 303 303- 844-4988. Or if you have access to the Internet, you can go to her website at beget.house.gov, and there you'll be able to find a great deal of information, but also email our offices and get the answers that you're seeking. Thank you so much, and thank you, Congresswoman.
Thank you, Juliet. And thanks to everyone who participated.